welcome to episode 189 of Fly Away, a weekly podcast from Outlander Travel about the thing we love most, travel. We're glad you're joining us this week. Our goal is to inform, educate, and inspire. We hope that tuning in for our weekly chats will help push you outside of your comfort zone and add some new experiences to your bucket list. We also welcome ideas for topics, so if there's something that you'd like to hear more about, please let us know. My name is Elizabeth, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Donna, Lindsay, Sandy, and Laura. We are also honored and a bit giddy to welcome our special guest tonight, Robbie Hamida. Robbie may not be famous to you, but to us, he's a bit of an icon, both for his amazing knowledge of the airline industry and for his colorful and fun-themed suits that he always wears to our national conferences. Robbie is the Senior Vice President of Nexion, a fully licensed, bonded, and accredited host agency with operations in both the United States and Canada. Nexion LLC supports more than 4,000 independent, leisure, and corporate travel professionals and is a branch of Zelle Travel Group, a travel leaders group company. Among those 4,000 agents are the agents of Outlander Travel. Having served the travel industry for more than 20 years, Robbie previously worked in the airline industry before joining Nexion. As Senior Vice President, he is responsible for overseeing operations within the company, which include customer-facing as well as the behind-the-scenes segments of the business. It's Robbie's ultimate vision that all agents, regardless of working location, are able to provide a complete end-to-end travel experience for their customers. And that is exactly why we invited him here today. Most of the travel we book starts and ends with flights, and this is often one of the most stressful and sometimes most expensive part of the trip. With all the fares and restrictions, and let's not forget the mysterious, we just need to complete a bit of paperwork before we can push back announcements from the cockpit, we thought it would be fun to invite Robbie to share some of his knowledge, insight, and opinions on air travel and why it's important to work with a travel agent when booking your trip. Welcome, Robbie, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you guys for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
This is going to be fun. And I've heard you talk about a lot of the things that I want to talk about today, and it's always both informational and fun. So thank you for joining us. So let's start with a really basic airline question that I think people outside of the industry don't know, but anyone in the industry would know, which is this GDS term. What is that? Can you tell us a little bit about GDS?
So I always laugh in the industry, what, you know, the term GDS, it's almost like, what's the number for 911?
Yeah.
So GDS stands for Global Distribution System. And that is the new name for what we used to call back in the old days, a computerized reservation system. And what it is a centralized system that started with a dream of American Airlines and IBM back in the 50s on a chance encounter on an airplane when American Airlines was trying to find a better way to manage their flights, manage their crews, and manage how to sell tickets. And therefore, Sabre was born, which was the very first computerized reservation system. I always laugh at the name Sabre. It's actually an acronym. Semi-Automated Business Research Environment is what it actually stands
for. So IBM
for.
Is an acronym.
Most people don't know that only because it's so odd. But yeah, Sabre was the very first system. And these systems were intended not only to be used by the airlines, but to be used by the travel agencies. Because back in the day, the people selling travel were the agents for the airlines. It was some of the only ways to buy airline tickets back in those days. And from American Airlines doing it first, and then the other GDSs started being born, other airlines started building their own systems. You had Apollo with United. You had what became Amadeus from some of the European carriers. You had WorldSpan being used by Northwest and Delta. And that's where these systems came from. And any agent who is booking a GDS booking air, and most of the online travel agency websites actually use these global distribution systems or GDSs behind the scene to get all of that content that is visibly available to you when you guys buy or sell travel.
And so just to be clear, before the GDS, the 50s, people were flying. So how did one buy an airline ticket before GDS?
So there are a lot of really fun stories. So somebody in that would go to a travel agency and say, I want to buy a ticket. The travel agent would have to pick up the phone and call a local reservation center at that airline. And every reservation center was set up a little bit different. One of my favorite ones was an airline called Braniff that was here in the Dallas area. And in the Braniff call center, agents used to take orders for tickets they were getting from travel agents. They would clip them onto a paper clip and shoot them across strings across the rooms at the res centers where they would buy a ticket. They would clip it to the string. They'd send it across the room, and an agent would pull up a picture of an airplane, take off a sticker of a seat assignment, stick it to that paper, throw it back across the string, across the room, back to the person who was taking the reservation from the agent. I saw pictures of this, but I never, ever saw it in action.
Okay. Mom worked for Braniff before she met my dad. That's what she did.
So you'll have to give me
the story. She worked in Kansas City. Yeah.
It's like arts and crafts for airlines.
Back when they told you if you got pregnant, you'd be fired.
Oh, gosh.
This was in the 60s, though, that she did.
Oh, yeah.
That's so funny.
Which, scarily, wasn't that long ago.
Yeah. Yeah,
but before you can go in these GDSs, everything was very manual, and we had to use that ancient invention, the telephone, which nobody uses anymore.
And paper and pencil, too, apparently.
Yeah. But, things have definitely changed. And, now, with a couple keystrokes into what still sometimes looks like an old mainframe, you can book a ticket on any airline anywhere in the world and have it be completely electronic. It's pretty amazing where we've become.
Are there any airlines out there that still actually use paper tickets?
Surprisingly, there are. We are currently, as an industry, at about 99.9% electronic ticket. There is a move that on July 1st this year, paper tickets will not be allowed to be issued in the United States anymore. But there are still a couple very, very obscure airlines, I think one's in Russia, one's in Alaska, that are still doing paper tickets. But for us here in the U.S., the Airline Reporting Corporation has set a end date of paper tickets, and that day is next month on July 1st. So we're kind of looking forward to it.
Yes.
Many of us travel agencies still have these very antiquated ticket printers that they don't make anymore, and there are no tools or pieces to fix them anymore. So we are looking forward to saying farewell.
I imagine there'll be some hammers and some blowtorches.
I better believe it.
So everything's computerized now. We don't have to run strings across the office to buy these things. So one would expect, like, when we go to Amazon, the books cost the same. The printer ink costs the same. This is a variation across the marketplace. So why, when I go look at airfare, are coach seats priced differently than each other? How does that work?
So they're really not. Most airlines have agreements with the GDSs that operate around the world that pricing will be the same no matter where you are shopping from. There are some differences. Airlines like Spirit and these low cost carriers, as they're called, Southwest used to be one of them, but they have a different pricing model. Special fares only available on the website because that is the core of their business. But with your major carriers, they do commit to having pricing across the board. What makes changes to that is availability. They only sell so many seats per flight, per day, at a certain fare. And at wherever you're coming from in the world, all of that is real time. So anybody in the world could be grabbing those same seats as you are. And the airlines have these very complicated algorithms that are constantly running in the background that say we have to sell X number of seats on a flight to make money. And so as you book seats on these flights, they will alter you know, what that plane looks like to make sure that every flight is profitable to the best of their ability. You always have these things from the outside that come in, like fair sales and, you know, fair wars and, you know, fair everything else that come in and change that and change the dynamics of looking for airfare. But, you know, one thing people don't realize is ultimately you're pulling from the same plane. So when we see people looking for airfare on five different websites, unbeknownst to them, all you're doing is driving the price up because you are pulling inventory from five different places, which sometimes sits on hold for a few minutes. So all you're doing is pulling inventory and just driving that price up.
So then
does that do the same thing when we're doing it as travel agents and looking on our sites?
Absolutely. Yeah, anytime. I always use the Twinkie analogy, and they always laugh at me in the office, only because I love Twinkies. But what I tell people in the office is, imagine going to the grocery store, and you go up over to the shelf, and there's 100 boxes of Twinkies. Think of 100 seats of an airplane. You have everyone in the store going to that shelf and grabbing Twinkies off the shelf. Some people put the Twinkies back. Some people buy them and leave the store. But while you're walking around that store, you have about 50 boxes of Twinkies just kind of floating around the store. And after about 5 minutes, you go put them back on the shelf because you decide not to buy them. Think of airline tickets that way. People go in, they grab them to shop, but they're still kind of in your cart for about 5 minutes before they really go back. And depending how many people bought those Twinkies and left the store with them, same as buying an airline ticket and using it, you know, putting it on your card and moving out, you know, the algorithm runs again, and then they decide, are they going to jack up the Twinkie price or lower the Twinkie price, depending how many of those sales were closed out. Airlines are no different.
Yeah, I had some people last summer, there were like 25 of them, and they called me to do group air. And so I called the airline and got a price, and the price they gave me was more than what you could see online if you were searching for like one seat, you know? So they were like, oh, well, we're going to do it ourselves. And then when they realized that there weren't 25 seats at that price, they called me back.
Yeah, because after the first three people get their cheap seats and everybody else is like, hey, what's going on?
Let's just jump.
Yep. That's one thing with group air. You know, people don't realize when you buy group air, the airlines will look at that plane and go, okay, in all fairness, we can give you this price, but everybody will get this price. Not one person gets it for $150, and the next 12 people get it for $700. So that's one thing about group air that sometimes I think people don't realize. The price online is not always what the price is, because they're only going to sell so many seats at that price. We find that as well when people search for one seat when they need five seats, not even just group airfare. They search for one, and they go book two. And they're like, well, why is it higher now? So that's something to know. You know, availability on an airplane, they use a series of letters and what are called fare bases. And every one of those letters may have 20 different fares. It's not alphabetical, not A, B, C, D. It's like F, C, J. They're out of order. But what happens is if you book five people, there has to be at least five of that letter available. If there's only two of that letter and then three of another letter, everybody has to, you have to go to where there's five of that letter. So what people do is you shop for one, it only finds the one. But when you go back to the five, then the price is much higher and they question why. And that's why the airline has said, we're only going to sell two more at that price, three more at that price, and maybe five more at that price. So not to complicate things, then people will say, well, why don't I just book two and three and one or however else I want to mix it up. You could do that, but here's why you don't want to. We live in a world of weather. Things go wrong. Flights get canceled. What if it's your children in a separate reservation? Now they're separated down, and they can't be accommodated for 5 days. When you split reservations up, you're just asking for trouble because you're no longer one big little party, and there's no guarantee you'll all be reaccommodated together, and that could ruin someone's vacation.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. One of the things I run up to, again, against a lot is a seat selection and people just not understanding you know, how quickly this process goes to where you can be looking at a seat that's available and talking to them over the phone and kind of grab it for them and it's gone. And then the next one's gone. And then, you know, why can you have some insight into that in kind of how the airlines or why it is the airlines do the seat selection system the way that they do and why certain ones are available?
So the first thing you have to understand is buying a ticket on an airplane does not guarantee you a seat assignment. That's the first thing that confuses people. Just because you buy a ticket doesn't mean you have a seat. You have a reservation on that airplane, and that's all that means. Then the fun part is trying to grab a seat assignment. One thing you have to remember, as I said earlier, is this is real time, especially when you start getting around holidays and spring break. Those seats are moving fast and furious, especially if there's something going on in that city, like a convention or a conference or you know, spring break in certain places. Those seats are moving very, very quickly. So a seat can be gone while you're booking it. But one thing to remember is once you get you never want to confuse seat and reservation. And that's a lingo that I think people confuse them and treat them as one and the same. And you have to break yourself of that habit. You have a reservation for a flight. That's it. Then on that flight, you may have a seat assignment. Now, that seat assignment is never guaranteed. And that's one other thing people I don't think people understand. There's this ancient document that still is in existence called the Contracts of Carriage. The Contracts of Carriage, you know, basically say the airline's job is to get you from A to B. That's it. So when people think they have seat assignments, it's always good to check before the flight. There are aircraft changes, sometimes months out, sometimes day of. Maybe something breaks on an airplane. They have to swap the airplane. You get in a different plane. You no longer have the seat you thought you were going to have. It happens. There's no guarantees in life, and there's no guarantees you'll get the seat you want on an airplane. Just like there's no guarantees when you get to your hotel, you'll get the room you want. There's no guarantees you'll get the car you want. There's just no guarantees, period. Obviously, they all do their best to give you what you want, but things happen.
As consumers, that can be very hard for people to understand. And that's something I run up to against a lot. They change the seat, they change the flight number, and then all the seats became unattached on a group I just recently did. And we had to go back through and try and get everybody sitting next to everyone again. And they just couldn't understand. We had this is what it said. It said our seat was this.
It's further complicated by that.
Sometimes seat? Where I had four different legs. Four different parts. Three out of the four, I could pick seats. The fourth one said, there's no seats.
Yep.
So why is that, that there's that difference?
So that could mean one of 9 million things.
Well, we'll just settle in then.
So it could mean anything from the flight's full. It could mean the flight is getting quick to an oversell situation. So they have chosen to zero out the seat map to avoid any issues and to try to get families together before it gets too hectic. It could be they're getting ready or just did a plane swap from a bigger plane to a smaller plane. It could mean a lot of different things. And sometimes you can call reservations and they know. But here's one thing. Most cases we're not informed of. As travel agents and even the airline employees, they sometimes don't know what kind of airplane a flight used to be. We get schedule changes all the time where a flight might change 1 minute, 1 hour, and we get those constantly because airlines are constantly adjusting their schedules. But what they never tell us is if the plane changes. Like if you went from a Boeing 767 to a Boeing 757, you're going to have some losses of seats. So the airlines have to figure out, okay, we have 30 extra people we have to figure out what to do with. And, you know, eventually in most times it always works out. But, yeah, there's a million different reasons why that could happen. But usually it's the airline being proactive and trying to stall to they can get their hands around the situation.
Gotcha.
Yep.
So speaking of no seat assignments and ruining your vacation, let's talk about basic economy, shall we? What is that, and why did it happen, and when will it go away?
So, it's
not going away.
I ask it that way because I kind of know Robbie's feelings on it a little bit, but go ahead, Robbie.
Yeah, basic economy has a lot of different names. Economy minus, economy nothing.
Things we can't say because we're a family.
So first you have to understand, again, it's one of those things where people get, a little confused. A basic economy is not a seat on the airplane. It's not like a seat on a toilet. People hear basic economy and they think you're going to get this standing seat, which is a real thing, by the way, in the back of the airplane. Basic economy is what's called a fare class. And what that means is it's still economy. And in economy, you have your regular economy fares, but then you have these fares called basic economy. What airlines are doing is they're trying to compete with these low-cost carriers that have debundled airfare. So a normal ticket, you'd get your bag, you'd get your seat, you'd get, the amenities that go with it, you'd get your miles, or your points, depending on the airline. But airlines said, well, there's all these new entrants into our world. And with those new entrants, they're debundling this. They're saying if you want a boarding pass, it's $10. If you want early boarding, it's $9. If you want a low airfare, it's $29. If you want to use the overhead, it's $100. So they basically took the airfare and debundled it to its lowest core. The big U.S. airlines, Delta started it first, and American and United followed. But 2 years later, people don't remember that Delta did it because they got so used to it. Everyone remembered when Delta and United did, or sorry, American and United did it. But no one remembered Delta started this 2 years ago. And basically what it did is it allowed the airlines to sell a little bit of a cheaper fare and really give you much of nothing. You don't get all your miles. You can't upgrade. You can't choose a seat assignment in most cases, or they allow you to pay a much higher fee to get one. Basic economy is really great if you're doing a day trip and have no bags and no cares in the world. And you don't care about miles and you don't care about status and you don't care. But the reality is, how they price basic economy is very, very cheap compared to economy. For example, like Dallas to Chicago, sometimes it's between $15 and $25 to be on a real ticket versus a basic economy ticket. Then you have to realize, okay, is it really worth for me to board in group 9 versus group 2?
Which really feels like group 26.
Yeah, exactly.
People laugh when I say group 9, but American Airlines does have group 9, which is basic economy. Your boarding pass is emblazoned with basically loser, all over it. Giant font as you walk up to the gate.
And they say the good news is you'll be flying on the wing.
So
you don't have to pay to use the toilet.
Yeah.
That's coming in Europe. Anyway, the airlines say, oh, you're in group 9, you're trying to board with a bag. Now it's $100 for your bag and a $50 processing fee because you didn't disclose you had a bag when you checked in. So some airlines took it to another level where if you break the rules of basic economy, you are punished if you make it to the gate with that bag. So, travel agents do a really good job of telling people you're buying one of these tickets. But sometimes people go off on their own. They go to the airline website. They don't pay attention. Mm-hmm. They notice it's $20 cheaper, and they click and they book it. And, we're in a society of instant gratification, and we don't read the terms and conditions. We click, 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 and then you get to the last screen, and, you don't miss the point of the big orange blot on your boarding pass and that you're literally paying triple for your bags. And if you show up at the airport with an extra bag, it's even more money. So basic economy, not a fan, And it does serve a purpose in our marketplace. But the reality is when most people realize how much it costs just to go up a level to just real economy, because at the end of the day, it's the same seats on the airplane. Mm-hmm. You just don't get to pick your seat to get to the airport. And most times, basic economy people are getting to the airport and getting aisle seats. It's not always a middle seat. It's just luck of the draw at the airport or at time of check-in 24 hours out.
But that has to be sort of a nightmare for gate agents everywhere, because I know almost every flight I'm on, there is some lady going, "What do you mean I can't carry a bag? That's inhumane. How can you do this to me?" And they're like, "Well, ma'am, that's, you know, you booked a basic," and they don't understand. They're like, "I don't know what you're talking about. I just clicked and booked something, you know?" So yeah.
Yeah, I travel quite a bit, and sadly, the way airline employees are treated is pretty awful. Mm-hmm. There's every time I'm at the airport now, I see an altercation of some sort, which is sad because they're just trying to do their jobs. And like any job, when you're getting yelled at all the time, you're in the travel industry. It's truly a fun job, but there are some positions where they get that frontline defense, and then it's sad, but they do get beat up. And I will tell you, especially if you have families, never, ever, ever, ever book basic economy. If you expect to sit with your children, never book basic economy. Yeah. Always book economy and always get seat assigned.
I see people comment online all the time about, "Oh, do you think people will just switch with my kids so that I can sit?" I'm like, you're probably talking about someone who paid for their seat upgrade. Mm-hmm. And no, buy the seat you need, because that's rude.
Yeah.
So exactly. Rude.
It is rude. And I've done that. I've given up my seat that I paid extra for so someone can sit with their family. But not everybody's going to do it. And you shouldn't count on the generosity of strangers, because then you're going to find yourself angry on an airplane. Yeah. And then
Meanwhile,
you don't have to. Yeah, and you don't have to, unless a flight attendant makes you, you technically don't have to. And I mean, I'll tell you, I've got, I'm usually pretty nice when I can be, but there's been a few times I've lectured people that your poor planning does not constitute an emergency on my end.
The only time I've ever asked somebody to switch was a Southwest flight where I was traveling with my 5-year-old. But honestly, I didn't even ask people to switch. I tell this story all the time. I was like, "You can sit with my 5-year-old. I'm cool with it." But people don't want to do that. It doesn't make any sense to me. I'm like, "I'll take this middle seat. She can have that one. You guys have a great time. She's got some crayons. She'll be good." So,
And I think, like, I have a lot of clients who are always, "I'm just going to get it on Spirit or Allegiant. I'm going to go with one of these economy." When you just price it all out and you show it to them, if they can see the difference, they understand they're not, you're talking, in most cases, you're paying more for a hassle than you would if you just, so in this basic economy kind of snuck in on everybody, I think, because I've seen a lot of people, even friends of mine who, just, they do the blind point, click and buy. Oh, this one's only $99. It's
obvious when you're booking a flight that, "Hey, are you sure you want to do this?"
Exactly.
A little warning box.
Yeah, our famous word in the travel industry is document, document, document. Yeah, if and like I said, there is a market for those fares. If there wasn't, it wouldn't exist. But there are some people who truly love those fares. They love the no commitment. They love only carrying one bag that fits under the seat in front of them. Business travelers sometimes love it because they're just doing day trips. If they know they're not going to change, they know they're not going to cancel, it's sometimes a good value for people. Generally we find it's not, but there are some people who will swear by it. To each his own.
Wasn't there a guy who flew basic economy and then got turned away because he tried to get on the plane with all of his clothes on?
I haven't seen
that. That has happened a few times. Yes.
It's clever.
That's a true story.
So can we talk a little bit about discount airlines? Because I think we've established that you are an expert, and we've talked about discount airlines before, but I think people don't always believe us when we're like, "Well, if Allegiant cancels your flight, you're going to be
the
there for three
breaks,
more days."
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about that in your expert experience?
So I always laugh because discount airlines, or the low-cost carriers, LCCs, as they're so nicely put, I always joke because they start out that way, then they don't end up being that way. You know, Southwest is the prime example, where Southwest used to have a rule that no fare would be over $399, and now you have these, you know, $1,400 Southwest tickets. Yeah. But, you know, you always have to, there, you know, as part of flying, you know, you have to know what's your backup plan. And if you need to be somewhere and then get out of that somewhere quickly, airlines, when it's not weather or mechanical, have the rights to protect you on other carriers. The problem is, once you go to these super low-cost carriers, like the Allegiants of the world, they have zero partners on anybody. So what happens is, if they decide to pull out of a market, or if the flight cancels because of a mechanical, as you said, it could be days before you ever get home. You know, there was an example that happened, you know, a few weeks ago in Mexico, where Sun Country was flying, I think it was to Cabo, and, you know, they canceled the last couple days of flights for lack of airplane. They just didn't have enough planes because one went mechanical and they used that plane to fly other places. And so they missed the last two flights to Mexico, and basically just told those people, too bad, we don't fly there anymore. And Sun Country is one of those examples that they're not allowed to protect you on anybody else. So what happened was all of those people were scrambling to try to find a way home on a week that was already sold out on every airline. And, you know, so there are two things I caution on. If you're going to fly an airline, make sure if something happens, they can put you on somebody else, if there's even seats. And two, buy travel insurance. I don't know how many languages we can tell people that. Well, we're getting to National Travel Insurance Awareness Month this month. People need to buy travel insurance. I can tell you horror stories of people having to do thousands and thousands of dollars out of pocket to book themselves in hotels in sold out cities because their low cost airline canceled and stuck them there, without any recourse to get out. And travel insurance would have gotten you out. So buy travel insurance.
Yes.
I mean, it's the pittance as far as what you're investing in your trip. So, worth every penny.
Yep.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, that's just it. If you're spending thousands of dollars on your vacation, and then you're hemming and hawing over sometimes $25 to $100 or even a couple $100 in air, you know, and if you don't have that luxury of that time, I mean, I just flew Discount Air to and from Europe, and I knew I had it in my schedule to where I could have been stranded and I would have been fine. But if you don't have that luxury, you're playing fast and loose with your, and the, you know, the horror stories that you see people, I have to get back to my job. And then now you're out $3,000 for your last minute.
I mean, you just think about the how many times you've sat on an airplane and they've offered like a $500 voucher because they oversold, and how many people don't take it. And it's like, they're actually giving you money and you're not willing to take it. Imagine if you got stranded, you know, and had no choice but to sit there. It's, if it's important enough to you not
drag you off.
Yeah. Oh, okay. There's that too.
Yeah, one thing to just touch on that just really quick is, you know, that's the law here in the U.S. You know, the airlines don't have to do certain things. I will tell you, when you travel to other countries and some of these things happen, it's very different. You know, the European Union has a passenger bill of rights. If you ever travel to Europe, it's on every wall in the airport. You can walk anywhere in a European airport and you will see this passenger bill of rights. Thailand has one. Japan has one. Whereas if any airline goes belly up or something happens and you're trapped somewhere, by law of that country, they have to protect you, pay for hotels, find you a way home. It's very unique. We're a very unique spot here in the U.S. where we truly don't have those protections. But when it comes to other countries, they do. So when you're in other countries, find out what your passenger bill of rights is in that country, because you might find some protections.
Yeah, I had a friend she's in the U.K., and she was flying to Chicago. And she had texted me from Maine and said they were refueling. And I was like, what? Why are they doing that? She said it was cheaper for them to do that than to wait for the plane to refuel all the way in London or Birmingham, because they would have to compensate all the passengers. So they have to wait till they get to the United States and then inconvenience everybody.
Right.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So, so I want to ask what is going to probably seem on the surface to be a stupid question, because it's obviously some business moves, but what, you know, sometimes I see that perfect outbound flight on Delta at just the right times. And then I see a perfect return flight on United, but I can't book those two things together. Can you talk a little bit about those relationships between airlines and why sometimes I can book different airlines at one time and sometimes I can't?
Yes. So airlines have a couple different kind of agreements. You know, there are three main ones. One is called a ticketing agreement, one is called a baggage agreement, and one is called an interline agreement. So the interline agreement is what's used when a flight cancels and they want to protect you on another airline. That means if a Delta flight cancels, they can put you on United, to protect you. Baggage agreements means you are allowed to check your bag through if you have multiple airlines on a single ticket and you want to check your, let's say you're flying from Chicago to Frankfurt on United and then you're going from Frankfurt to Munich on Lufthansa, they have a baggage agreement. So your bag will be checked all the way through at no additional charges as long as it's on one ticket. That is critical to know. And then they have ticketing agreements, which means when they file their fares with the local government, especially on international carriers, and fares are filed, which means they publish a fare that will take you on from one airline to the other airline, then they allow you to ticket those on the same ticket. That's what that means. So airlines, you know, load their fares in all the different systems, and they say, okay, if we load this fare, you can fly on any of these 14 carriers, and you can buy half on this airline, half on this line, and then ticket it together. The other part of that is there are, when you go into international, you get into some other legalities. One of them is a joint venture, or where they have antitrust immunity, where an airline is allowed to sell seats on a partner airline. And so, for example, you can buy a Delta ticket, but it's operated by Virgin Atlantic, and they're allowed to share the revenue, share the losses, and they work together. And they, in the eyes of the governments in both countries, they have antitrust immunity. They're literally operating at one entity, as one entity, something they call, there's a term in our industry called metal neutral, M-E-T-A-L. And metal neutral means these airlines, as part of this agreement, can sell on each other, and they're all considered one in the eyes of the government. So, for example, Delta Airlines, along with KLM out of Amsterdam, Air France, out of Paris, and then you have Virgin Atlantic out of London. They are considered, Alitalia out of Rome. They are considered one and the same. So a passenger can book going on Delta, coming back on Alitalia, going on KLM, coming back on Delta. Over the Atlantic, they're all one and the same. It's called a transatlantic joint venture is what they call that.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay, sir.
I have a question about ticketing. Actually, I came across the other day something to the effect that they added a new flight to Cancun. Southwest flies to Cancun. They've been flying to Cancun, but they were adding a separate flight. But then there was a little disclaimer that says, we haven't gotten a proper approval from the Mexican government yet.
Yes.
How safe is it to fly actually on that route?
To book that route, you mean?
To book that route for that person. Is it that same agreement where they will put you on another flight if something happens and then they have to back it out?
So with Southwest, they have no agreements with any airline. So Southwest cancels, you know, if they still go to that destination, they'll have to reroute you on a connection to get there. Most of those, generally, they will only put a flight into the system for sale if it's looking like it's going to go. If there's any heavy risk, they're not going to be. It usually says, you know, flight 123, Chicago, Cancun, subject to government approval, right across the bottom. When it says that, it's usually, it's pretty much going to go. It may get delayed a day or two, you know, pay the fun paperwork. But in general, if they've loaded it for sale, they're pretty confident there will not be any issues because they can't just add a flight. There has to be an open slot at the airport. If it's international, the governments have to approve it in both countries. But generally, they're just waiting for paperwork at that point, which is why it's open for sale. It's very rare one will get shut down. I remember it once. Or I should say it happened to one airline in the past couple years. I know they had to cancel all of their flights because they didn't have the right paperwork.
But, I mean, that's why I thought it was okay because, I mean, Southwest flies there several times a day. So if they had to, they could get those passengers there.
Right. But when you have a new slot, you know, if they're adding a flight, are they using one of their existing slots? Did they buy another landing slot? Are they taking, did they buy another airline's landing slot that's not using it anymore because it might be seasonal? So that's where you get into those government regulations. And it all has to work across the board. Otherwise, they have to pull the flight.
Gotcha.
I have a question. I see people post this online all the time. They always want to know when the best time is to buy a ticket. Is it like really midnight on a Tuesday that you need to be looking for fares to drop? Or
so, you know, there used to be a big myth that that was when you wanted to buy it.
Right.
Because there was always a myth that the best fares are always loaded Wednesday at 12:01 a.m.
Right.
And so the best time to buy was then. The best time to buy is any time. You know, I always tell people, if you're going to travel during busy times, just book early. Otherwise, you're going to be severely disappointed. You know, I always tell people during spring break, book for summer. You know, summer, book for the fall. You know, you don't want to book too far out because you will start to see a lot of schedule changes and a lot of other things. But, you know, there's always fare sales going on. There's always fare wars, you know, where an airline will put a fare in and everyone else follows it immediately. Sometimes they last for a day. Sometimes they last for a couple of days. Sometimes a week. But the best time to buy airfare is any time. But don't wait to the last minute. Flights are getting very full. And people usually get very disappointed because they can't get what they want. But I usually tell people, book 4 to 6 months out. Unless it's Christmas, book 9 months out.
Yeah, I'm actually running into some problems with Thanksgiving going to Europe. It's already, like, I'm seeing fares for $3,000 in my cheap fares that are coming up. Yeah, so it's, yeah, it's getting scary. Okay, we're almost out of time, so but I want to ask this one last question. And if I'm putting you on the spot and you can't answer it, then Heidi can cut it out. So don't worry about that.
Edit this.
Yeah, but the world's best airline, if you could always fly on one airline, because I know you actually fly a lot, what would it be? Do you have an opinion?
So the world's best airline, I always say, is the one that I'm on. And here's why. You know, they don't call me the resident airhead for nothing. You know, I have been on many, many airlines. Some are despised and some are loved. And the reality is a lot of flying is who you're flying with. You know, if you're flying with a loved one, that is the best flight to be on. You know, when you're flying alone, you know, do you have a great crew on board that airplane and they're all having fun? I will tell you, I was just on a flight last Friday. It was on American. We were at DC flying out of Reagan back to Dallas. We had an engine failure. They're taxiing to the runway, engine just failed. And I will tell you, we were there for 3 hours sitting on the plane. It was 95 degrees outside, but we had the best crew. And they were just nuts. They were so much fun. And it was a party on board that plane. It was, to most people on the plane, it was the worst thing ever. And I'm just sitting there going, you know, the engine failure happened on the ground, not in the air. Right. There was a plus. But at the end of the day, the flight attendants on board were so awesome. Like, it was literally a party. They fired up the movies. They started serving booze. Half the plane was lit by the time we left. But to most people, oh, my life is ruined. This flight is 3 hours late. You know, I got on at midnight versus 9 p.m. But we were having so much fun on that flight because the crew made the difference. And that's really what it is. You know, I've flown on Singapore in first class. I've been on, you know, I've been very fortunate using burning through lots of miles. I usually burn my miles for the big stuff, you know, the first class sleeper suites, you know. all airlines are striving to do a really good job. And what I find, what makes the flight more than anything, is the crew on board the airplane, because they're the ones that make or break that flight and that service, and they will make it a great flight or not. And airlines are really doing more to invest in training their people, because let's face it, the industry, you know, has a few black eyes from some things that have happened. You know, in my opinion, one person deserved it, but
we'll talk about that at conference.
but the, you know, the reality is we have to fly. If we want to get somewhere efficiently, we fly. Millions of people fly every single day.
But and I want to bring my service peacock.
You know, and those are the jokes. The airline industry has been being made fun of. You know, Seinfeld, and even before that, airplane food has always been the butt of every jokes. So I think we're hardwired to hate airlines, when the reality is so many flights go off without a hitch. You never hear about those. You know, the thing about airlines, too, is there's so many of the vendors in the travel industry space do so much to help people. We never hear those stories. We never hear about United went from a 737, you know, which 140 seats, to a 777-300 to Puerto Rico, just to get supplies there, fresh water, medical supplies. Delta for weeks flew an extra flight there every day, you know, relief supplies to Hawaii for the, you know, the East Coast of Hawaii, you know, for the very limited area that's being impacted right now. But that's what they do. We never truly understand those stories. That's why when it comes to me and ever picking the best airline, I truly can't do it, because I know some of the stories that they do. I know the good stuff they do. But for me, every flight I'm on is the best flight, because I am on this tiny tube flying through the air, you know, at 600 miles an hour, like a bird. And it is the most amazing things. And what I'll end with one of my favorite lines is, if you've never seen the movie Living in the Age of Airplanes, it's a 45-minute National Geographic movie. I highly suggest seeing it, because when it comes to aviation, we never take that time to look out the window and appreciate what we're looking at is what most people saw in their lifetime. So look out that window, one single glance, it is what people saw in their lifetime. We're seeing more than they ever saw. That's truly, truly amazing. And this is probably the fastest we will ever travel in our lives. And we should be enjoying it and not criticizing it.
Oh, that's a nice positive note. Yay. We should have Robbie on it.
Robbie.
Well, that is our show for this week. We once again would love to thank Robbie for taking the time out of his busy schedule to chat with us tonight. Thank you so much. And share his vast industry knowledge. We honestly could talk to you all night about this, so thank you. We welcome your comments and feedback on this episode, or any episode really. To leave comments, visit us at outlandertravel.com, then click podcast at the top of the page and find the episode you wish to comment on. Or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpodcast, or just search for Fly Away. And please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. On behalf of Donna, Lindsay, Sandy, Laura, and myself, Elizabeth, thank you for joining us here at Outlander Travel, and we'll see you next week. Gotta fly!